I'm going to guess, Aaron, that the result you wrote about on Saturday wasn't exactly what you thought you would be discussing, at least certainly not to that degree.
Without question. I did not see that performance coming. I actually predicted A&M to win the game in the paper, and believe me, I have heard about that pick. It was really unpopular with Alabama fans, and they have let me know that they are questioning my mental acumen after that selection. But I absolutely did not see that performance coming. It was as complete a performance, obviously, as the team has had this year. And you got to go back a ways, maybe last year to Arkansas or LSU, to find a game that was as thoroughly dominated in all three phases as what Alabama did to Texas A&M.
Look, I know this is purely speculation. It's the only thing it could possibly be. But do you think the outcome of the game, in terms of being in question maybe in the second half, even in the fourth quarter, would have been different if A&M gets a pick six or at least an interception on that first drive, as they should have, rather than Alabama getting 3 points?
Yeah, you know, I've debated that with a couple of people. I don't know that it would have, simply because Alabama's front seven defensively completely dominated that football game. Kenny Hill never got set. He was never settled, obviously got sacked six times. There were no wide receivers open. Alabama got pressure, got good coverage. There was absolutely zero running game from Texas A&M. They were one-dimensional. They might have got that early score, and that might have played a factor into how Blake played the rest of the game. Maybe he wasn't as sure of himself. The confidence level wasn't as high. But I just don't think A&M could have done anything offensively to change that outcome, and that's what shocked me. You know, I thought Kevin Sumlin, which we talked about last week, the way he scripts his drives that's given Alabama such fits over the last 2 years, I figured he would get a one score, two score, maybe the first two drives. But what I didn't factor in was how big a percentage Johnny Manziel's scrambling ability, how that factored into the game. And Kenny Hill is just not that same player. And once you're one dimensional, you know, 99% of the time, Allen is going to pin his ears back, put a lot of pressure on you, and it's going to be very difficult for you to make a living that way.
Aaron Suttles of the Tuscaloosa News joining us on the Shock Top Hotline presented by Green Beverage. After seeing Ole Miss play the last 2 weeks and seeing them in person 3 weeks ago, Aaron, I've said that I think they were a good team when they played and beat Alabama, but that victory allowed them to think that they could be or at least play at the level where you might use the term great. Will this win for Alabama against Texas A&M elevate them tremendously going forward, or do you think this is strictly a week-to-week deal with this particular team?
I think it gives them confidence in themselves that when they have the right energy level, and they can do this to anyone. Now the only question that remains, Alabama football team at home is quite possibly the best team in the country. I mean, Blake plays at a completely different level at home. Now we need to see that translate to the road. I can't even put into words how important I thought the energy level was. It was as if they started enjoying football again. And that's difficult to do when you're beating a team 59-0. It's almost like this is supposed to happen. We've seen it so often with Alabama under Nick Saban that they didn't take a lot of – you didn't see a lot of passion. They look like high school kids that were playing the game for fun on Saturday. Even in the third quarter when they're up 52-0, jumping around on the sideline, going crazy when Reuben Foster makes a big special teams hit. I think getting back to that, enjoying football, letting that emotion kind of carry them, I think that's big going forward. And I think the results of that game let them know, hey, we can do this, and maybe not to this level, but we can beat any team in the country if we play this way. And obviously that's the goal, and it starts Saturday in Neyland Stadium doing it on the road.
I think it's highly understandable given the fact that he suffered the injury against Florida, but I thought that running the football, Blake Sims was a little hesitant the previous couple of weeks before Saturday. After a run such as the one that he had, do you think we're going to see more of that from him?
I do. I think that's going to be, and I don't think they're going to rely on it heavily, but I think it's a, you know, five plays per game. And if nothing else, it makes the defense have time to prepare for it. It's just another element to the Alabama offense that, you know, this guy can beat you with his legs scrambling, but he can also now beat you in designed runs. And he's proven that when he gets the protection, he can beat you passing. And that's a nightmare. I mean, ask Kirby Smart what it was like to have to a game plan for Johnny Manziel. I mean, it's not fun. There's, you know, you can account for everyone but the quarterback most times. And that's the beauty of that read option. I mean, you know, the Texas A&M defensive end on that play, the 43-yard touchdown or 46-yard, whatever it was, he's in perfect position.
Yeah.
And Blake just shook him. And then, you know, not to single him out, because Blake shook two other defenders too and then put it in overdrive. He's just a tremendous athlete. And it's just, you know, I think it's exciting for a lot of Alabama fans because they've wondered, what if we had an offense like that? That's really fun to play that way. And while I don't think Alabama is going to be a read option team, they're not going to change who they are. Now that added element of the defense having to honor that, that's going to open up the offense completely.
Two things that I think are huge going forward for this team. Maybe, you know, not that it will have a major impact perhaps this weekend, not taking Tennessee lightly, but the fact that Bradley Bozeman played as well as he did at center, and that Grant Hill coming in for Austin Shepherd played at a high level as well. To see those two guys add to the depth, I've got to think is going to be big the rest of the way, don't you?
Yeah, no doubt. Having now a backup that has playing experience and meaningful snaps, that, you know, Bradley went in late in that Ole Miss game, obviously got a road start, got a home start. That's a lot. You just can't, you know, practice is great, and it does a lot of good things, but it cannot get you game experience. And no matter how much you practice, you're going to be, those butterflies are going to be churning in a game, and now Bradley has that experience because Ryan's had some injuries the last 2 years, and while he's probably back and will probably start Saturday night, you know, he might miss another start. So now you know, if you're Mario Cristobal and Lane Kiffin and Nick Saban, you got to feel a little bit better about that. The fact that Leon wasn't great, but he was, you know, pretty good at right guard. And you know, when Grant Hill came in, the first play they ran when he went into the game was a screen pass. And that just shows you the athleticism that he has, how good he is with his feet, got out to that next level, and it was him on a defensive back, and he cleaned him up. Obviously, that's big. I still think they need to solidify that right guard spot. It's been bouncing back and forth between Leon Brown and Alphonse Taylor. But it's nice when you can start building that depth, as you mentioned. And that's going to be huge going forward, because the SEC is just a grinder, man. There's such physical games remaining on the schedule. You got to have some backups.
Our guests appear courtesy of the Shock Top Hotline, presented by Green Beverage, talking to Aaron Suttles of TideSports.com and the Tuscaloosa News. I may have made too much out of this. I saw it Saturday during the game and forgot to mention it to Coach Saban when I had a couple of opportunities. But Lance Thompson ordinarily is in the press box up in the coach's booth during the game. They moved him to the sidelines to help, I was told, with substitutions and to do that a little bit more smoothly, thinking maybe it was a one-game deal or maybe because of what Texas A&M likes to do offensively that might be a better fit for that particular game. They certainly seem to be in pretty good position defensively. I've got to think we're going to see that again, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Chris. I noticed, I forget what exactly play it was. I think it was when Kenny Hill got called for intentional grounding. Lance was as animated as I've seen an Alabama coach. He was, you know, he practically ran out on the field, you know, begging for the pass for the intentional grounding call and got it. And I thought that added into it, you know, that emotion that we talked about, that we just haven't seen it a lot. Alabama was such a business-oriented, business approach to the game that, you know, it stood out when Lance went on crazy on the sideline. And I think the players appreciate that. Now, you don't want to do that every play because then players eventually tune you out. But to see that emotion from their coach, hey, I've got your back, I think that allows you to play a little freer. You know, you get a little emotional. And you know, obviously, you want to cap that at some point. You don't want to play emotional to the point where you're drawing flags and you're not playing fundamental football. But in instances, when your team needs some energy, and that was great to see. And you know what? Another thing that no one's really talked about is how the fans fed into that, and it created that environment. Even when you're up 45-0, the fans were there. I mean, they didn't really leave that early. They were enjoying watching the players and the coaches have fun. And I can't. It's hard to quantify going forward, but man, you got to think that's good for this football team.
I know this thing's going to play out, and I guess that's part of my question to you. It's kind of a two-part deal. Are you concerned with Archie Manning no longer being part of the mix for the college football playoff, that the SEC won't get the voice that it needs in order to get a couple of teams into the playoff? And I guess another part of that is, do you think it's going to play itself out and that will be a concern at all?
Yeah, I do. I don't have a lot of faith in the playoff, the college football playoff committee. And it's not, I'm not attacking anyone's integrity, because I do believe they're doing what they believe is best. But if you're telling me at the end of the day that Alabama, that doesn't say Alabama wins out, Ole Miss wins out, or even Ole Miss loses one, and Alabama doesn't get to represent the West in the SEC championship game, and let's say Georgia wins it, so Georgia's going one of the four teams, even if Alabama wins out and it's only lost to a really good Ole Miss team, are they going to get ahead of an Ohio State or a Michigan State that has one loss? Are you going to get two teams from the SEC when a conference like the Big Ten gets shut out? I just don't see it. I think it's going to be – it's not a criteria to be a conference champion, but I think it's going to weigh a lot. And, you know, the geographical, how that's weighted – the representation of that, I think it's going to matter. And, you know, obviously Archie not being on that committee to lobby certainly hurts that, but I had doubts even when Archie was on the committee. I don't think the goal and the intent is to pick the four best teams. I think it's to get to appease a lot of people. And when you're not talking about picking the four best teams, then you got to question, what are we doing here with this playoff?
Tell me what we can look for from you the next couple of days. Anything special that you're working on you can share?
Oh, yeah. We'll be releasing probably tomorrow, maybe Thursday, an in-depth look at Lane Kiffin's return to Knoxville. I'm sure that will get the fans up in Knoxville pretty riled up on Saturday night. We got some entertaining stuff from people that were around Lane in Knoxville in 2009 and in the early part of 2010 that I think readers are really going to enjoy.
That's coming out when?
It'll be out tomorrow or Thursday.